Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
This is not CNN. This is a Korean broadcasting in the Stalinist state of Korea with a professional mourner newscaster on the type you see on ABC, CBS, and NBC. Forced to cry on air because the Stalinist dictator has died. We did a rough translation, although we don't have a Korean expert. Where will all that brandy now go? And the lobster is going to rot at the railway stations? What will we do with all of these Russian prostitutes waiting in Pyongyang? Oh, great leader, can we send them to heaven with you? Please, great leader, let us send the lobster and the cognac and the hookers. We gladly starve ourselves to death for you are so great. We gladly work in slave labor camps for your pleasure, because you are a god. We toil for you, great leader. Even in your passing, we gladly toil for you in slave labor camps, great leader. We understand your last wish was to have a brisket from Madeleine Albright sent to the funeral, but we don't know if we can reach her. She's busy lobbying in China. Welcome to the Savage Nation. You see, the interesting part here is that one of the world's most brutal dictators has died, and yet according to the vermin in the media, he was just another world leader. Just another world leader, an intelligent man, a rascal kind of man, a rascalian type of man. According to NPR, he was actually an enigmatic, mercurial man. They wouldn't call him a Stalinist dictator, because then you're liable to ask the question, Maud, what is a Stalinist? And you'd find out that Stalinism means Russian communism, means communist, means, well, Democrats are like that, don't they? State control of everything, Maud? Now, you look at South Korea, a country that has relative freedom, and you see a booming economy producing cars and other products that the world wants, booming cities, fat and happy people. And then you look at the north of Korea that has been under the yoke of a Stalinist mentality ever since it was created. And what you see is what you get with the Obama administration if it's allowed to go out on steroids, which is a state-controlled nightmare. But then again, you can't think this through, because if you do, you're liable to come to the right conclusion. Welcome to the Savage Nation. It's Monday, and of course, most people are on vacation. Normal people are not listening to radio. They're busy. I don't know what they're doing, whatever they do on vacation. I don't know. I have no idea what people are doing, but I did the numbers in my head, and I figured it out this way. Let's say I have between 8 and 10 million listeners a week, you know, during a regular season. So you have to figure it out on a day like this, before Christmas. What's the audience? 30%, 20%, 10%? So most people do a throwaway show. They throw the show in the garbage and they assume it's nothing. But I assume there's between 50 and 200,000 people listening at any one time today. And so therefore, that's a stadium full of people. Therefore, it's got to be worth your while to listen, or else I'm not going to be on the air and you wouldn't listen tomorrow. So none of my shows have ever been throwaway shows, and therefore the biggest story is the death of one of the world's most terrible people and the creation of a fantasy about him by the vermin in the media, because they don't want you to connect communism with evil. You understand that? Okay, so that's point number one. Now, one of the greatest Quislings of our time, you look up Quisling, Q-U-I-S-L-I-N-G, was Madeleine Albright, in my opinion. Madeleine Albright, as you well know, was the most deranged, self-important lunatic to have ever been made Secretary of State. She is now happily working as a lobbyist for China, along with that other saint of humanity, Sandy Berger. You know, Sox Berger, caught with state secrets in his underwear? Well, the Albright-Stonebridge Group is a lobbyist, a lobbying firm for, amongst other companies, China. And so Madeleine Albright, who visited Kim Jong-il while he was still alive and still swilling the Hennessy and enjoying the pleasures of the Ukraine, while the people were starving to death, enjoyed a fabulous wedding-like reception for herself, where 30,000 people were made to dance in unison. And she, of course, enjoyed the buffet, very much reminded of some of the better buffets of Georgetown. But the fact of the matter is, there was a horrific gulag in North Korea a while ago, and there still is a horrific gulag in North Korea that is not being reported. And I'm not going to bore you with the details, but that means an awful lot of people killing, not a lot of people being killed in North Korea. Albright, though, didn't see any of this. Albright was like the people who went to the Soviet Union and saw the Potemkin village. Albright was like the people who went to Nazi Germany when there were allegedly concentration camps. Of course there were, and millions of people were killed, primarily Jews. And they came back saying that the Jews were happily working as cobblers and tailors in German-run work camps. But they enjoyed the banquets that the Germans put on for them the same way that Albright did in North Korea. Some of them even came back and worked for the German-American Friendship League because there was money to be made. So if you look at the Albright-Stonebridge Group, Madeleine Albright and Sandy Berger, as I say, are the principals, including another prize called Warren B. Rudman. And here is what they say they do. We are unique in combining our D.C.-based expertise. You want me to deconstruct that? With a large experience and action-oriented team on the ground in China, headed by a veteran with 20 years' experience on trade and investment issues in the Chinese government. This structure allows us to leverage the insights, relationships, and experience of seasoned U.S. and Chinese professionals on behalf of our clients throughout the country. Shall I deconstruct that sentence for you? Meaning Madeleine Albright is trading on her government position and acting basically as a liaison to see what she can make off the deal. I don't want to read anymore because it's disgusting. As far as I'm concerned, there should be no such abilities of former government officials to become lobbyists for foreign powers. I don't care who they are. 1-800-449-8255. Here's an interesting Christmas tale for those of you out there who are into the Occupy movement. This comes out of Salisbury, North Carolina, and it's a very fitting city, Salisbury it is, as you'll soon see, because it's food-related. Police say a man celebrated his 45th birthday with $283 worth of food stuffed in his pants. But it wasn't ordinary food he robbed. Shrimp, ribeye steak, baby back ribs, and smoked turkey. One Salisbury man celebrated his 45th birthday by trying to stuff all of it down his pants. Ronald Broadway was arrested Thursday night in the parking lot of his local Food Lion supermarket, packed with enough meats and fish intended for a birthday and holiday celebration. But an employee saw him doing it, sticking it in his pants. He allegedly had sweatpants under his pants with the ankles taped around his sweatpants were taped around his ankles to keep the stolen food from falling out. Well, the employee notified the manager, who called the police. And while this individual was walking to his car, police noticed food dropping from his pants, which Mr. Broadway allegedly kicked underneath the cars. As police detained Mr. Broadway, they began to pat him down and discovered that food was flying out of the fly section of his jeans. Coming from his fly were 8 bags of shrimp, 8 ribeye steaks, a package of smoked turkey, and an undisclosed number of baby back ribs. The food items were valued at $283. Police also found a fuel cleaner in Broadway's pants. The officer had asked why he had sweatpants taped inside his jeans, and he said it was cold outside. He has been charged with shoplifting. Now, the funny part about stories like this are the blog comments. Some of them are phenomenally interesting to read. One of them wrote that he's a typical, well, let me read it to you because some of the bloggers are very funny. Let's see. I guess he considered the grocery store part of Obama's stash. He had no room for 40-ouncer, I guess. I get a lot of comments about the shrimp coming out of his fly, too. Oh, God. Some of them I can't read. This gentleman most likely was driven by the entitlement bug to grab what he wanted without paying. Then another person justifies his shoplifting of food, saying that, well, something to do with the bankers, and that the poverty is caused by bankers, and he wants everyone to rob food all across America. Take it, it's yours. Okay, well, we won't even comment on that. All I can suggest is it'll keep the police quite busy. Happy birthday, schmuck, is another comment. Let's see, some of them are very funny. What, no barbecue sauce to go with those ribs? God. He obviously felt entitled to the meats or he wouldn't have taken them. Another loser in America. Some is racist, which I can't read. And we won't talk about that. 1-800-449-8255, michaelsavage.com. You want to talk about the real story, the big story? The fact that the North Korean gulag is the worst in the world? You want to talk about the fact that Madeleine Albright is the Quisling of our time? Would you like to hear a real doozy? How about NPR, National Stalinist Radio, talking about Kim Jong-il's death? You cannot believe some of the things that the media was saying. They called him mercurial. They called him everything but a mad, psychotic, insane dictator. I'll be right back. Savage. That Hennessy, all those hookers. Oh, God, what will we do with it? Welcome back to the Savage Nation. You're listening to the sound of professional mourners crying in North Korea, the prison camp of the world. And there's nothing you could say about it. I mean, the fact of the matter is there are professional mourners that exist even today. Did you know that there are professional mourners? Do you know that at some Chinese funerals, I've seen professional mourners here in San Francisco. They stand outside the funeral parlor and they cry behind the hearse because the family usually hates the person who died, or there is no family, or they're waiting for the old geezer to die to get the inheritance. And look, what's a funeral without weeping people? So they have women who trail the funeral procession crying in the streets of San Francisco. I'm not kidding you. I've watched many Chinese funerals, but it's not limited to China. I know that Orthodox Jewish people have professional mourners. Did you know that in this day and age? For the same reasons that I've just stated above, which is that they usually have no friends, and the inheritance is either gone, so there's no one there to cry, I mean, to put on the big act. So there it is. Look, all the world's a stage, and you're just an actor in it, as Willie said, so what are you going to do about it? The fact of the matter is, you're dealing with a tremendous issue. The fact of the matter is, he was one of the world's most evil men throughout all of world history. But you wouldn't know it by the vermin in the media. I mean, they so sanitize this guy. If a conservative died and they covered it at all in this country, they'd make the conservative broadcaster worse than Kim Jong-il, even though he starved and killed hundreds of thousands of people a year. 50,000 prisoners were reported to have worked each day in conditions that resulted in the death of 20 to 25% of the prison population every year in the last report we had. But this has not been reported recently because the media has stopped doing its job. Women forced to have abortions, newborn babies beaten to death, children used for slave labor, thousands brutally murdered or worked to death. The gulag is alive and well in North Korea, teeming with hundreds of thousands of brutalized human beings condemned to a blood-drenched existence so horrific it is almost impossible for civilized people to imagine. This was written in February of 2003 by Phil Brennan on Newsmax when there was still reportage about North Korea's horrific dictatorship. Did you know that people were arrested just for offending the communist dictatorship in even the most minor of ways? If anyone said anything negative about Kim Jong-il and was reported by a neighbor, they'd wind up in the gulag. Slaughter pens. NBC News exposed the horrors of this torture and slaughter pens, interviewing former prisoners, guards, and U.S. and South Korean officials. How come you know nothing about it today? How could Madeleine Albright have gotten away with being the Quisling of our time? Answer, because when you own the press, you can get away with anything. Let's go to the first caller today on the Savage Nation. Never a throwaway show right here. Always a live, important broadcast. The best I can give you. WOR's listening. Michael Savage is talking. Daniel is calling. Welcome to the program, Daniel.
Hi, Dr. Savage. You know, you're absolutely right. I think I was under a misconception of Kim Jong-il for many years. I actually did think for the longest time he was a mass murderer who tortured and maimed and starved his people to death. But then when I heard excerpts, and they are available, of Madeleine Albright, her take on Kim Jong-il, I realized there's another side of this guy. When I heard her say that Kim Jong-il really liked the American culture, and he loved Michael Jordan, and he liked the Hollywood movies, and that he really had some advice for the directors and how some of the parts should have been played.
Well, of course, but Hitler was a vegetarian and a teetotaler.
Hello?
Yeah. Did you hear what I said?
No.
I mean, even dictators have their soft side. Hitler was a vegetarian and didn't touch alcohol, but he killed millions of his own people. So the fact of the matter is Albright was acting as a quisling, basically a mouthpiece, a liar for Kim Jong-il's regime.
Right. But I realized he had a really soft side to him that I didn't realize. But that was coming from, of course, Madeleine Albright, who I think, working in conjunction during the Clinton administration, oversaw the worst intelligence lapse of our nation's history, which is why I consider him to be the worst president thus far. Obama and his administration's subversive elements we won't see for years down the road as far as how it's going to play out. But Clinton oversaw the worst intelligence
lapse. We could argue over who's worse, Clinton, Carter, or Obama, and we could spend a lot of time on it. My point is that Madeleine Albright ought to be ashamed of herself, but a woman like that, a woman who writes a book, an autobiography, called Pins, P-I-N-S, about her ugly legs. This, after all, is one of the most unattractive women in the history of the world, who went around on talk shows and said that foreign dictators like Kim Jong-il loved her legs. Do you have any idea what a deranged individual was once our Secretary of State? Have things really changed? Who takes these jobs? And by the way, what does the State Department actually do but lobby for foreign governments? What is the U.S. State Department's function? Does anyone actually know? Why are they continuously taking anti-U.S. positions? Who is the Department of State? Why has it always been people by style?
There are 100,000 people performing in a massive display of coordinated song, dance, and gymnastics. They practice 8 hours a day, every day for a year, and there's never a guarantee that Chairman Kim Jong-il will be in attendance. But tonight, he is. What's different this time is that Kim Jong-il appears alongside his son. When the show is over, North Koreans in the audience applaud not for the performers, but for their leader.
See, there it is, the Communist News Network that was CNN back then, and nothing has really changed because of the creeping communism into the American media. Most of you don't even know how evil this man was. Joining us right now is a man who knows more about it than most of us. He's a friend of mine. He runs an important magazine on the web called American Thinker. com. His name is Dr. Thomas Lifson. Thomas, welcome to the Savage Nation.
Hi, Michael.
So, we know how bad it was. The gulag never went away, isn't that correct?
Oh, it never got as bad in Stalin's gulag as it got in North Korea, at least proportionately to the population. They killed off almost 10% of the population from famine, deliberately, which, of course, Stalin was guilty of, too, in the Ukraine. But the total thought control in North Korea is unlike anything in Russia or the Soviet Union of Stalin's day, because they've hermetically isolated it. It's cut off from the outside world. Almost the only way of having any kind of interchange illegally with the outside world are the people up in the northern border of North Korea who go across the frozen Yalu River in the winter and sneak into China and come back. And that's about it. I mean, they're cut off from the internet. They're cut off from broadcasting. You can't receive any solid.
But, Tom, we know that Bill Clinton had a disastrous policy of pandering and providing aid to Pyongyang. We know that the regime stole tens of millions of dollars in food aid intended for the starving people and diverted it to the military and the political elites, just as communists have always done. And it was Bush, finally, who came in and put a stop to the Bill Clinton regime. So why is it that today virtually no Republicans nor Democrats are commenting on the horrors of the slave labor state of the North Koreans?
Your answer is probably the same as mine, Michael. They don't care.
Do you think they know? Do you think that the candidates know who he is and how evil he was and how the people are still suffering over there? Do they actually know it?
I wonder. I have to wonder. You and I pay attention because we're fascinated by great evil, and we need to understand it. But
yes.
I think most people avert their eyes. It interferes with the narrative. And, of course, as you're remembering, Madeleine Albright went there. I mean, that was when the dam broke, and they kind of decontaminated North Korea and started shipping billions of dollars of aid in various forms.
So wasn't Albright really a quisling for him? Isn't she trying to capitalize on it now with her trade group, her and Sandy Berger working with as lobbyists for China? It's a nightmare. The Stonebridge Group, Madeleine Albright and Sandy Berger lobbying for Chinese company, for American companies who want to do business in China. This is the woman who basically whitewashed Kim Jong-il's murderous dictatorship.
Yeah, but nobody's doing any business with North Korea, really. It's China. And you know, China has it has its own difficult relationship with North Korea. North Korea isn't exactly a pawn, though the Chinese have a knife at their throat, so to speak, if they wish to use it. But the problem is, if they block food and energy and other supplies from going into North Korea, which they theoretically could do, then they have chaos on their hands. They'll have 4, 5, 10 million people pour across the Yalu River into China, needing to be taken care of, starving. Mm.
Thomas, you're an expert on the area. I know you speak Chinese, you speak Japanese, you've been a consultant there for years. These are years prior to your work with the American Thinker. So tell us this, because I don't know much about the ethnic origins of the Korean people to begin with. Obviously, they're descended from the Chinese. Is that correct?
Mongolian. They're a mixture. They were invaded by the Mongols, and you know, it's a peninsula off of China. It's kind of like a little bit like Wales is to England, you know, off in the corner and kind of difficult and different and contentious a little bit. Traditionally, China treated it as a suzerain state, you know, that a tributary state that they let them run their own affairs, sort of, but they had to bow down before the Chinese emperor. And it's a Confucian state. But the Koreans are, well, look, they've got the misfortune of having the Chinese, the Japanese, and the Russians as their next-door neighbor. And, you know, that's a bad neighborhood. They've had a terrible history, probably the most tragic history in the globe, except maybe for the Armenians and a few other people that are buffer states. But the Koreans have been repeatedly invaded and brutally treated throughout their history. So they're a very feisty and contentious people, extreme sense of nationalism. And,
Tom, I understand this. And, of course, we know that the horrendous treatment of Koreans by the Japanese in World War II, one of the worst disasters of World War II, little reported. But let's, for the average listener listening to the show today, remember it's a holiday week, the audience is smaller, but those who listen are very deeply tuned into reality. You have North Korea, a Stalinist state, because of their allegiances with communist Russia originally. Isn't that correct? Wasn't Russia the original client? Russia was the leader, yes? Or was it China?
Kim
it was
Jong-il,
Russia. All right, it was Russian Soviet-style communism that Kim Jong-il's father introduced into the North. The South of Korea is more or less, and it is a mini, in some ways, still quite a little bit of a police state, but it's still somewhat of a free state, isn't it?
Well, it's not totally controlled by China, but for citizens in North Korea, there is no freedom. It's totalitarian, utterly totalitarian.
But I'm saying, but if the average person were listening and they said, okay, you've got two Koreas, the North follows the old Soviet model, They're starving to death. They produce nothing. The South follows the American model, and it's booming, and the people are relatively free. Wouldn't that be a fair analysis?
Absolutely. Absolutely. I'd take it even further that I was just in South Korea a couple of months ago. It is rich. It's not just booming. It's at European plus levels of affluence. They have gone farther and faster than anybody I've ever seen, and they're on a cultural and economic roll now. You know, their companies are, for the most part, doing very well in autos, electronics, machinery, just a whole range of basic industries.
Thomas, isn't the lesson for America, it's a very clear lesson to me, which is that if you go for the Democrat, Socialist, Obama school of government, you wind up in its extremes with the Soviet style, which is top-down bureaucracy run out of a central office in Washington, D.C., and people do horrendously in a country like that.
Yes.
Whereas if you go to the free market model, people do better. Isn't it as simple as that?
It is as simple as that, Michael. And it's the thing is, they've taken it full cycle in North Korea, where in the 50s, after the Korean War, they had a better track record for the first 5-6 years than they did down south, because they had more minerals, they had more industry left over, they had hydropower, they had a lot of advantages over the south. But they've taken it full circle in terms of bureaucratic rot, where it's completely breaking down. There's no spare parts, the electricity doesn't run, it's not functioning. It's broken
down.
Yeah,
so it's an example of what centralized government does at its worst. And of course, you have in America today tens of millions of people who are screaming for more power to the federal government, more power for Nancy Pelosi and Barack Obama, more power for the federal bureaucrats, and less power for the states and the individual, without even understanding where it leads.
Bullseye.
Thomas, what else would you like to tell our audience today on the Savage Nation that they should know, other than what we've already described and the fact that Madeleine Albright should be ashamed of herself, but a woman like that obviously is deranged to the extent that she doesn't even know what shame is. She wrote an autobiography called Pins, if you can believe it, about her legs, boasting that Kim Jong-il and other dictators couldn't take their eyes off her legs, Thomas. Can you believe that she was once Secretary of State?
Actually, I can. We live in an era of narcissists running our institutions. Just it's astounding to me. I mean, Obama is even worse than Albright. But this self-absorption that you find in people of a left-wing liberal mindset astounds me. I feel like I'm living in another planet sometimes when I see the kind of people that rise to the top, particularly in politics.
Where does North Korea go now? The son is obviously 24 years old or in his 20s. He has no experience whatsoever. He's an inheritance case. By the way, this is interesting to me, Thomas. The communists claim that they're for the people and for the common good and that there's no elitism. Here you have a literal dynasty that goes back to either Egypt or ancient China or ancient Persia, where power is passed from father to son, where there's absolutely no people power whatsoever. Isn't that quite an interesting paradox?
It is, Michael, and to take it even further, they don't care about the people. This, you can understand this government as gangsters. It's just like Tony Soprano and the other mobs. The way the regime stays together is that this is how Kim Jong-il and his father before him did it. They pass out bribes to people, cases of Hennessy cognac, a Mercedes-Benz, a Sony high-definition television.
Solyndra loans, in other words, along the lines of the Department of Energy.
On a petty scale, enabling their top elite to live a little bit like, you know, middle class people do in the United States, basically.
Yeah.
But it's all passing this loot down to make life tolerable for the senior people in the military, in the police, in the security apparatus, in all the sensitive areas. So it's all kind of passing down lanyaps to people. So
Thomas, what happens next? Will the son actually take power, or will the generals shovel him aside and take power? Will there be a coup?
I think he's useful to them as a symbol. It remains to be seen whether he'll have the personality to be able to pull it off. But keep in mind also that his mother and not his mother, excuse me, Kim Jong-il's last mistress. He went through a wife and three mistresses, but his last mistress and her brother are very powerful people. They were Kim's confidants, and they're supposed to be the regent for the young one. And they don't have a kid.
She's like the Monica Lewinsky of Korea?
Well, there were a couple of those. Kim Jong-il...
But instead of it winding up as a stain on the dress, it wound up as the heir apparent, I guess.
Yep.
Thomas, you know, it is interesting to me. The most interesting of it all is the Swiftian view, which is that the people are idiotic enough to believe that communism is for the people. And here you have a clear, almost textbook case of Stalinist government, and it's a pharaonic institution passing it on from father to son. There's absolutely nothing to do with people power there, is there?
It's naked power. That's all it is self-serving power, just like
So Pyongyang is Chicago on steroids.
Absolutely. It's Chicago beyond the fondest dreams of any mobster. They're gangsters. That's all there is to it. They're gangsters. And, you know, they finance their damn government by making methamphetamine and selling it in Japan, and they counterfeit U.S. dollars. I mean, they are gangsters.
Wow. Thomas Lifson, Dr. Thomas Lifson, I should say, of AmericanThinker.com. As usual, a pleasure to speak with you. By the way, you mentioned Tony Soprano in passing. I don't know if you're doing it, Thomas, but I'm actually watching Sopranos reruns because television is not as good as it used to be.
Well, yeah, I don't have time for that, but I did enjoy Homeland this year. I hope you watched it.
I also like Boss. Have you seen Boss?
Boss. Those I thought were two excellent series that, they're not the Sopranos. They don't have the resonance.
All right, Thomas, thank you very much for talking with us about Kim Jong-il and his son, whatever his name is, a clear example of abuse of power. No question about it. I'll be right back on the Savage Nation.
Savage.
It wasn't until Kim Dae-jung went and said that he had some very important discussions with him and found him to be somebody that he could talk to that was rational, pragmatic. I found the same thing.
Well, it's just been announced that the son, Un, has taken power from Il to Un. From Il to Un. Husky fella, too. We wish him the best, but this is a nightmare. You've got a nuclear power. You've got a police state, you've got a totalitarian dictatorship, you've got a nightmare of mobile missile launchers running around in North Korea that are very hard to detect. They have mobile intercontinental ballistic missiles, ICBMs, that can be on the move, so they're not easily detected or tracked. North Korea has nukes and can strike before anybody in this country even gets their head out of the campaign sands long enough to recognize that the world has changed during the campaign. But where is our president on this? Why isn't President Obama speaking about a momentous situation? Let's forget Ron Paul. Let's forget the Iowa GOP caucus. Let's forget that Mitt Romney has an opportunity that he's not seizing. Let's forget that we have no leadership on the Republican side to speak of at this time, because they're all talking about past talking points instead of present and future talking points. We have a chief executive named Barack Obama. The president should know better than we do what danger this poses, and yet he hasn't said much of anything, has he? Why not? After all, one of the world's greatest dictators has just died, and an inexperienced dictator's son has now just been announced as the great successor. And what's really astonishing to me is how the news media gets away with calling him North Korean leader dies, not North Korean dictator. I mean, this is an opportunity for a lesson for the world. Children could learn what a dictator is. They can learn what a prison camp is. They can learn what it means to live in a place that's not free. And look what the communists in the media are doing. They're making him just like any other leader. North Korean leader dies without describing who he was. I'll take your calls now on the Savage Nation. We'll go on to other topics in the next hour. New York WOR, Carol, go ahead, please.
Yeah, hi, Hi, Michael. You know, I live in Queens, and the neighborhood of Fresh Meadows has recently, or over the past few years, has a greater, very middle-class Korean and Chinese population. I use a very, very large laundromat in the area, and I have to tell you, it is very shocking to me. Very middle-class people, but kind of have that Chinese communist look. I was there today. I have to tell you, it was a sea of black armbands.
Mourning for the dictator in Queens?
I do not understand how these people get in our country. I'm serious.
Are they? Do you think they're communist Chinese plants?
For sure. I think that they've been let in through this administration because this is part of the revolution from within. I think the Chinese communists especially are very, very aggressively trying to...
Well, you know, it's funny you should mention it, because in a mall near me for weeks now, there have been Chinese in business suits and young ladies passing out brochures about a Chinese opera. And it's been strange to me. It's just outright propaganda. And it's in our malls, and I don't understand why they're everywhere. They're even canvassing neighborhoods now. I was shocked to see Chinese men, young, smiling guys in suits, walking around neighborhoods, giving out brochures about this coming Chinese opera. And a little birdie in me said, maybe these guys are actually canvassing every neighborhood and reporting back to Central Command who lives there, what they see there, whether there's a threat there. I don't understand it.
I don't think that's what they're doing, but I do think, because I'm seeing the same exact thing here, but these people actually live here. They've come in the past 3 years, and my sense is that that this is part of switching the revolution quietly from within.
A lot of Chinese in San Francisco are lovers of Mao Zedong, the world's worst dictator, where 60 million Chinese died from various and sundry, including starvation. Chinatown in San Francisco was traditionally vehemently anti-communist, but in the last number of years, I've seen Mao statues reappearing in gift shops to show you how bad it is.
Savage. Warning. The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
Kailua Loop buzzed with activity today. Workers streamed in and out of the affluent beachfront community. Hawaiian Telecom trucks were in the neighborhood. Landscapers were hard at work on properties they say hadn't been touched in years. Tent, design, and installation companies pulled up, but said they signed waivers and were prohibited from telling us what they were hired for. Although the first lady and daughters arrive Saturday, it is unclear when the president is arriving. But when he does, there's a good chance he'll stop at Kailua's Island Snow for a shaved ice, which he's done for the last 3 years.
Who's to account for a man's taste? At least he likes shave ice, not Hennessy. You know what I'm saying? We got to count our blessings. Do you approve of Obama's $4 million vacation? Do you think it's appropriate for Obama and the family to take a $4 million vacation while there's such massive unemployment in the United States of America? I mean, after all, there is Camp David. That's not a bad place to go for Christmas. It's kind of nice. It's a little shabby, I guess, in some ways, after all these years. But do you think it's appropriate for Obama to take a $4 million vacation at a time like this? We are talking about interesting occurrences going on. Virtually within the 24-hour period, one of the world's most evil men died. At the same time, one of the world's most enlightened leaders died. And you hear almost nothing about the enlightened leader while you hear everything about the communist leader without anything about his communism nor his murderous, brutal regime. Now the son has apparently succeeded him. The young gun has taken over. And we've been joking about that here at the Savage Nation because I don't know if you know how the show works, but my entire team is in Oregon. I'm in San Francisco, and it's all done remotely and has been for years. The team consists of some great guys, Beowulf Rockland producer, Charles, what's your last name? Charles Wiegand, also associate producer, and then catching the callers is Doug Lynn, who is of, he looks like a young gun himself, by the way. They just sent me an email of him. Doug is of part Korean heritage, so I was just asking them to send me a picture of Doug with his arms clearly showing up on my computer screen so I can see if he is wearing any black armband. And fortunately, the only thing that is black in color on Doug's body right now are his sneakers. So, Doug, I assume you are not a sympathizer of the North Korean state. I assume that is the case. The gulag is nothing to laugh about, but we're trying to make a light of it the best we can. 1-800-449-8255. As I say, ironic that on the same day two political figures from opposite ends of the spectrum die. Vaclav Havel, who I believe was on the Savage Nation, Kim Jong-il. The former admired and respected as a champion of freedom, and the latter the embodiment of the worst the human race could produce, allowing his people to starve so that his grandiose military fantasies could be fulfilled. Astounding, isn't it? And we're talking about those things now on the Savage Nation. Let's go to the callers. The phone number is 1-800-449-8255. Do you approve of Obama's $4 million vacation? Let's take the first caller in this hour from New York, WOR. Again, John, you're up. Go ahead, please. What's on your mind?
There's a Chinese, interesting what you said about the Mao. There's a Chinese restaurant on St. Mark Street, my neighborhood. I live in the village, and there's the guy, I kept staring at this little statue, and I couldn't, it looked like a chess piece, but it was Mao. It was, you know, he's got the bald head.
Yeah.
And he's got the...
Well, he was a man who killed 60 million of his own fellow countrymen, some through starvation, some through a stay of labor camps, some through execution. Now you're in the St. Mark's Place is the West Village. I know it very well from when I was a young man. You are allowed to listen to my show in New York in the West Village. It's not blocked like in the old Eastern Germany.
Well, maybe if I was in that Chinese restaurant, he'd probably throw me out. But I'm saying in my house.
Well, have you really asked him why he would glorify a dictator? Have you ever asked him that?
I was trying. The English got really bad when I started pointing at the statue.
Oh! Then suddenly they dummy up like they don't know what you're saying to them. I get it.
I had a problem with the food, so I never went back there.
But no, you got to be careful because once you start in with that already, you got bamboo slivers in your chop suey the next day.
The bamboo slivers started before I even started that, so the whole thing went down. There was a piece of noodle that was in a rolled up, and it was cold, and it was on the. It was on the plate, but it wasn't part of the rest of the noodle dish, and I was pointing at the noodle. He wouldn't take it back.
Did you unravel it to see what was in the middle of the noodle? Was it there something in there for you?
A cluster of short noodles all stuck together on the side.
No, you have to. Now, we can go through the whole litany of our problems with Chinese food, but we all love it. So no doubt you found Chinese food that you like, but you do have to ask yourself, why are so many American Chinese suddenly glorifying this mass murderer, Mao Zedong? Who are they? Where did they come from? How did they get into this country? And worse yet, what are they doing here?
Yeah.
You know, I mean, I've read real paranoid reports that there's a whole army of them who have been smuggled into this country as illegal aliens, but they're really members of the People's Liberation Army, and they have arms caches waiting for the so-called signal of revolution. How do we know what to believe at a time like this, John, where there's a vacuum of leadership? We don't know anything, do we?
No. It seemed completely ridiculous. I mean, there's actually a bar in the neighborhood called the KGB Club, and they have.
Well, what if you went to a German restaurant today and there was a statue of Adolf Hitler? That would never happen, isn't that correct? What you're talking about is the equivalent of a bust of Adolf Hitler, let's say, up in a German bar somewhere in Manhattan. That would never happen. It wouldn't last 10 seconds. Is that right?
Yeah. I mean, they just romanticize it. They don't equate Stalin with Hitler. They think it's something other.
Yeah, well, like Stalin and Hitler were equal and opposite chess pieces, and Mao Zedong was an equal and opposite a counterpart in China, and Kim Jong-il was a mini-me of Mao Zedong. the same kind of police state. And it's a horrible thing to see the media either so ignorant they don't even know who Kim Jong-il was, or so bought out, or so drugged up that they give this guy a pass. A shocker. Just a shocker, John. Thanks for calling. I give away a free copy of Abuse of Power, but I'm tired of saying it. What is today's date already? What is the date of the month? Does anyone know? The 9th? When is Christmas? When is the official day? It's Sunday, isn't it? So people are going to go through a shopping frenzy from now until Sunday. And tomorrow night, Jewish people light the first candle on their menorahs. Obama did it 2 weeks ago because he could. And he lit them all at once so he didn't have to, so he can get it over with. Imagine if he had a light one every night. Now, it's interesting that during the Muslim holidays, he doesn't do it all at once, nor does he do it at the wrong time. If there's a Muslim celebration, for example, that lasts a number of days, he's very careful to make certain that he respects the number of days in the Muslim calendar. But I guess with the Jewish audience not even knowing their own religion, it doesn't matter if he lights all the candles or none. As long as they vote Democrat, Socialist, they're happy with him. 1-800-449-8255. What would you like to talk about? Kim Jong-il is in the news. Michelle flying to Honolulu again in Air Force 2 prior to her husband. The estimated cost of the vacation is $4 million. How do you feel about the president? Well, let's put it another way, since most of you don't feel anything. George Bush is in power. There's massive unemployment. There's tremendous social discontent. And he and the first lady take a $4 million vacation once again. What would you think would be going on inside the Stalinist news bureaus of America, the ABC, CBS, NBC, CNNs, and the others like MSNBC, the little mini-me of the Stalinist NBC? How do you think it would be playing today if Bush had taken a $4 million vacation through such massive unemployment? I'd like to ask you your opinions on that. The phone number, again, you know, and the website is michaelsavage.com. Let's go to Wisconsin. Conrad, how do you feel about Obama's $4 million vacation?
$4 million is outlandish, but this isn't the major topic. 2011 is the year where all these leaders have fallen, one after another, from the beginning of the year to the end. And Obama, there's a reason why there's two jets flying to Hawaii. One with the First Lady and one with the President? Probably not. They're probably on the same plane. And what we've done in the national security for some years is to have a look-alike president. He didn't even sit in his cabinet and try to work out deals. We can't get this guy to sit in one spot for very long to work out anything. So all of a sudden you have this guy who you can't even keep. I just heard earlier today, he's like putting Jell-O, trying to stick Jell-O to a bulletin board. Someone made a comment like this, and it is very accurate. What's going on?
What do you mean Jell-O to a bulletin board? What's the metaphor about? I don't get it.
Well, you can't keep him in one spot. You can't keep him.
Well, okay, that's neither here nor there. I think $4 million on a vacation is an outrage, but it's an example of what a Stalinist society looks like, where the leaders live in one world and the people live in another, and then the leaders tell you they care about you. Kim Jong-il was Exhibit A for those who like Obama, Exhibit A for those who want a massive federal government to run the economy and government to halt free market economies. Kim Jong-il was an example of everything wrong with the Democrat Party on steroids. He led a nation that cannot buy socks for members of its government. Its soldiers live in poverty, malnutrition, and yet a dynastic rule. That is socialism to a T. What's interesting to me, and the thing that stuck out most, is the contradiction in terms. The People's Republic of Korea. You have been taught in the American public schools that communism treated everyone equally, correct? And now in North Korea, though, to be leader of this supposedly egalitarian society, you must be from a certain family. So the North Koreans may as well be saying today, the king is dead, long live the king. Don't you see the irony in this? Don't you idiotic communists understand finally what you are actually praying for will kill you? I'll be right back.
Savage.
Russian prostitutes, what shall we do with them, great leader? Mickey Mouse tapes. Where shall we? Can we send you the Mickey Mouse tapes in heaven? Anyway, look, what are you going to do? You know, you celebrate the death of a dictator, but you don't know what's coming tomorrow. Here you have a communist people's republic, right? Like the schmucks in Berkeley here in the Bay Area, the People's Republic of Berkeley. They would lead to mass death, mass starvation, a death of the society altogether. Or the Democrats are following in a mini-me version of it with federal control of everything. You look at North Korea. That's an example of what centralized control does to an economy. And now you look at South Korea. That's an example of what the free market does. End of story. Period. Some things are that simple. Of course, from my point of view, everything is food. Food, food, and more food. So the minute I hear Korea is in the news and Korean dictator dies, all I can think about is there a good Korean restaurant in my neighborhood? And unfortunately, I have to go all the way to San Francisco to find some good ones, and I'm not in the mood tonight. I've eaten in a few good Korean restaurants. One thing that I noticed was how clean everything was. Immaculate in this Korean restaurant that I went to. But since I'm no longer favoring Italian food, I may have to find a Korean restaurant to hang around in. It may be worth going to Japantown and getting to know the owner, unless he's wearing a black armband. That's the end of that one. Of course, they're very famous for the braised meats, right, Doug? Doug is my call screener, Doug Lynn, and he unfortunately looks very much like the young Un. He really does, a larger version of the young Un. But I just learned that he's part Korean and part Irish. Am I correct, Doug? I don't mean to in any way step on your family heritage. And so I asked him, I know the Irish love Jameson and such, or Irish whiskey. I said, what does the Korean side of you love? Do they like Hennessy the way the dictator liked? And he said, anything. So I said, you mean the Korean part is more Irish than the Irish part? He got a kick. Doug, you're a good-natured guy. I still don't see the armband on the hand, and thank God for that one. 1-800-449. I don't know. I'm a strange guy. Like, if someone dies in another country, all I can think about is the cuisine of the nation. There's one thing civilized nations do provide us is a cuisine. Did you notice that? That you can almost judge a society by the, a civilization, really, by the cuisine it exports. Think about that. There are a few civilizations that have been invited into America that have virtually no cuisine, or at least nobody would go to it in an expat manner. I mean, I don't have to name them. You could pretty much figure it out. Then there are others. They have a cuisine that takes hold, and everyone loves it. I don't have to name them as well. I mean, because you can pretty much figure that out. In the great melting pot of America. You can tell an awful lot through a bowl of soup or a plate of basic starch about a civilization. It's very interesting, especially in a great country like ours, where food is just so plentiful. There is no starvation whatsoever. 1-800-449-8255. The other operational question on the show today is that the president, President Obama, is going to spend $4 million on a Christmas, or I should say, excuse me, a holiday vacation. He certainly wouldn't be having a Christmas vacation. He is having a holiday vacation. And the estimated cost, according to a British newspaper, is $4 million. How does that fit with the image of a president who cares about unemployment and such? How do you buy this lie? How do you buy it? Don't you understand that you've got an elite class living up at the top levels, and they're telling you that they care about you, and this is the way the game is played? You got to give the Republicans credit, because at least they don't pander to the poor. The Democrats only pander to the poor and the illegal alien. And yet, they live like kings, because they are and they can. When you're at the top, you're supposed to live well, truthfully. That's how you're supposed to live if you're a world leader. You're supposed to take $4 million vacations and let them eat cake. That's the way it's supposed to be. Kansas City. Doug, what do you think? You're on the Savage Nation.
Dr. Savage, I think the most offensive part of this is that Michelle Obama could not wait 2 days to save this country $100,000.
Well, she did the same thing at Martha's Vineyard last summer, don't you remember? Bashing the bankers on Sunday and then partying with them on Monday.
What did she do with her time to make it worth $50,000 a day for a bankrupt country? It makes me sick.
Well, but you see, this is what a Democrat socialist regime is like. Talk the talk, but don't walk the walk. Tell them to eat carrot sticks and you eat barbecued ribs. In other words, it's all what it's always been, only in it's on steroids right now. The phone number is 1-800-449-8255. It's the Savage Nation! I'll be right back.
Savage.
In memoriam for the passing of one of the world's worst dictators, we are playing some of the music from his homeland. Allegedly, these are the Ukrainian comfort girls. Before they leave the country, they have to perform for him in a massive celebration in Pyongyang Square. In order to get out of the country, they have to do this special dance. I'm looking at a menu here now, a Korean menu. I'm not enamored of Italian food at this time, so I'm not hanging around in any Italian restaurant. So there's a Korean restaurant in San Francisco. The thing is, it's like if you say pasta primavera, veal parmesan, it's like most Americans can understand it because it's got Latin roots. And somehow we all know something of what it means by now. And this is the problem, is that when you go into a Korean restaurant, the transliteration of the Korean language is so difficult, you can't visualize minu chigi, which is sea bass stew with mixed vegetables and spicy sauce for $26.95. Well, what if you say, you know what, let me have some gotagi chigi, crab stew with mixed vegetables, $20.95. I don't want that. I'll have some al chigi, that's Polak spawn stew with tofu and mixed vegetables in spicy sauce for $20.95. Or if you're in a religious order, you can have an agu chigi, which is monkfish stew with mixed vegetables for $20.95. Or again, if you're into the Polak fish stew, you can get Dong Tai Chigi for $18.95. And so you get the picture. It doesn't have no meaning for an American. Soon tofu chigi. So you say, okay, I know what tofu is. And that's soft tofu stew with beef, oysters, vegetables, and spicy sauce, $14.95. But then you get down to Kong Biji Chigi, ground bean and pork stew. So you go to the numbers. Give me a $49. It's not the same as I'll have the veal parmesan with a Campari and soda. That's the problem. Why I have trouble going into Korean restaurants. And I don't have any Korean friends who I can go with, but the food is a knockout. I went there once. It was amazing. Clean, like you cannot believe it. You could eat off the floors, and you could eat off the table. And the sea bass casserole was astounding, with like 50 different appetizers and this and that. Who can do this on a Monday night? What do you want to talk about in the Savage Nation? Stay home and eat leftovers. That's what I'll do tonight. Let them eat leftovers. Oh, so let me give you a movie to watch. Since the show pioneered the phrase news, views, and reviews, which was stolen by a radio station in San Francisco, which is now out of business, news, views, and reviews on the Savage Nation. Well, way back in the 90s, God, how time flies. So I'm going to give you a review. Okay. About 2 months ago, I chanced on a movie called The Debt. It was made in 2007, and it's an Israeli film. It was so astonishingly good that you couldn't stop watching it. Now, without giving the plot away, I got to just tell you, it starts with young Mossad agents going to Germany to capture one of the butchers of one of the concentration camps who performed experiments on living beings. And then it's a flashback to 30 years later when they're established figures in Israel. And the back and forth is astonishing. It's amazing, this Israeli film, that version, okay? Now, a new version was made with Helen Mirren, and she's a fabulous actress. But truthfully, it's about 80% as good as the original Israeli version. The movie is called The Debt. Either way, it's worth watching. The Debt is now on DVD. You can watch it on one of these on-demand channels if you get the service. And I'd recommend it even if it's the current version with Helen Mirren. But I must tell you, the original Israeli version, if you can find it, is far superior. And you don't have to be Jewish to love this movie. Just as you don't have to be Jewish to eat rye bread, I can tell you that the movie has universal themes of truth, lies, honor, duty, country, loyalty, bravery, and what a big secret can do to a man after 30 years. And, of course, vengeance. Ultimately, the debt means vengeance. And the hero is a woman, Mossad agent, who was portrayed brilliantly, by the way, in the new version, the Helen Mirren version, by Jane Chastain. She's fabulous. She's actually almost better than Helen Mirren. She's beautiful and very believable. Worth watching, astonishing. You won't be able to stop. It's worth watching with your children as well because it's a moral tale. So that's a movie I recommend highly, and that's your review here on the Savage Nation. And now back to news and views on your local station. We're talking about Obama's vacation in Hawaii, a $4 million vacation. People are, again, shocked that he gets away with this, because when President Bush went to Crawford to a ranch, the vermin in the media they endlessly talked about how dare he go on vacation while there's such unemployment, how dare Ronald Reagan chop wood, how dare George Bush even eat at a time like this, he has no right to even eat a hamburger, how dare he eat a hamburger when he should be eating a tofu burger, how dare they do anything, after all they're Republicans and they're not Stalinist communists like us in the media, therefore whatever he does is bad. And now you have a guy living like a dictator, flying around a $4 million vacation. Doesn't bother you? Reno, Nevada. Cheryl, your opinion counts. You're on the Savage Nation from Reno, Nevada.
Hi. I don't like Obama spending all that money to travel either, but sometimes people do take separate means of transportation when they have kids. In case something does happen to one, they still have...
No, I understand, but every vacation, two separate planes, Air Force One and Air Force Two, that's very expensive to travel that way. Two separate teams, two separate security teams, two separate 747s or whatever they're flying. This is very costly, Cheryl.
I know, but that, you know, that...
Cheryl, I have a bigger question for you, because I'm down here in the San Francisco Bay Area, and it's around the holidays again, but there's no snow up in the mountains, are there?
No, none. Not much at all.
You had snow for Thanksgiving, but if I go to Incline, to Tahoe, it's like a dust bowl, right?
Pretty much. They're making
It's like looking at permafrost out of the hotel window. I mean, that's not my idea of a vacation, to sit in the hotel and stare at permafrost. I want to see Frosty the Snowman.
There you go. I would be better. They're making snow.
What's going on in Reno? It's gone up or down right now, the economy?
Oh, it's not very good, really. There's not much construction or anything either.
It's the gambling is off. Is that it?
Yeah, that too.
Well, Reno's an interesting little town. It really is. I always used to like to go there when I was first moved to California. I found it exciting. I actually still find it exciting to cross the border. I feel like I'm leaving a police state when I leave California. It's a strange thing. Ever since I moved here in 1974, if you drove up into the mountains, in this case, you don't drive north. You drive east to get to the mountains, obviously, the Sierra Nevada. But for a boy from New York, mountains always meant north. Anyway, they're east. Everything is a polarity of difference here. But I remember that when you get down to the lake and you drove around Lake Tahoe, when I would cross the border at the Cal Neva Lodge, the old Sinatra partial owned hotel, right into Nevada, it's as though you could breathe. You felt as though you were leaving a very, very restricted, constricted, overly controlled state into something that represented freedom, and that was Nevada at that time. And that's going back even to 74. I still get that feeling. I haven't been up there in a while. I was up last year in October. And I would have gone up, truthfully, this week for a couple of days, but there's no reason. Because to me, it's like, A, there's no snow. B, you know, what am I going to do up there? What am I going to do, gamble and eat? You know, there's nothing to do. And then I turned down a trip to the Caribbean this week. I know you say, well, what are you, crazy? Why didn't you go? It's too far. And I don't like the heat. Some people love heat. I get sick in the heat. I actually melt. My mind melts. I like cold. I've told you that before. And then there's another thing, and I don't know whether to disclose it on the air, because then it's going to start to sound like someone else. Maybe I should wait until Wednesday, but let me put it to you this way, without making it into a bigger deal than it is. It probably turned out to be nothing. I opened the door, and I shouldn't do it. It's not fair to the audience. I don't know whether to say it or not to say it. Now I can't say it. Now I have to say it. Now I shouldn't have said it, but sometimes I drift into things I shouldn't have said. Let's put it to you this way. I'm going to a certain doctor on Wednesday. I would have waited, but she was not available till February. She's like a top in her field, and I got to see her because of something that I'm a little concerned about that's new, that appeared out of nowhere, and it shouldn't be where it is, and let's hope that it's nothing and it'll go away, and I'll be back.
Savage.
Also told me he had three computers in his office, watches a different television network, and stays informed. He says that he reads.
Was he watching CNN?
CNN. Mm-hmm. Said he did. And
there
it
is. There's the quisling of our time. Madeleine Albright, the nasally former Secretary of State, glorifying the dictator of the Hermit Kingdom who passed away. Madeleine Albright, again, one of the worst women in American history, now lobbying for China with Sandy Berger, former national security advisor under the same president, Bill Clinton. Soxberger, as you well know, was caught stealing state secrets and, of course, got away with it because he can and because he has protexia or did at the highest level. At least that's one man's opinion. So we're talking about these things. It's an important day. You have one of the worst people in history to have died, who ruled a virtual prison camp state where hundreds of thousands were beaten and starved to death, tortured, starved, forced to work under the most inhumane of conditions. The gulag was there, and the fact of the matter is, it was so brutal that there's no reportage of it today by CNN, ABC, or virtually any of the other networks. It's as though just another world leader has died. This is a very dangerous precedent to permit these rats in the media to get away with this. You can't let a Hitler die and say, world leader dies, a leader of Germany dies, without saying who he was. What in the world? How do we get to this point in American history when these children come out of these journalism schools and glorify Stalinists like this or sanitize them to such an extent? And yet they have nothing but hatred and vitriol for conservatives. I can guarantee you that the representation of Michael Savage by these rats in the media would be much different than it was for a man who killed hundreds of thousands of his own people. And that shows you the brainwashing that we're living through. Now, talking about Korean food again, I'm trying to decide what I'm going to eat tonight. The A course is $48.95, the B course is $43.95, the C course is $38.95. I think I actually had the C course for $38.95. It was fantastic. Mandu guk, mandyum jian, wang so gui. I don't understand what any of this means. I know that the fish soup was amazing. It was the best piece of fish I've had in years, and the restaurant was clean as a whistle. The fruits and ice cream I tell them to keep. The kimchi I love, and I order more of it. My face turns red, and I'm happy the next few days. As they used to say to me when I had a professor in Hawaii who introduced me to Thai food, or this is back in the late 70s, he was a man, one of these great old-style Americans who traveled in British circles. He was a parasitologist, and he grew up in the waning days of the British Empire when he used to travel to all of the exotic places in Africa and Asia doing malaria research, or I should say anti-malaria research. So he's always had sort of a British flavor, even though he was a nice guy from Brooklyn. I love Bob. So when he first took me for my first curry, this is so long ago, I'll never forget, he would smile as we drank our beers and ate the hot curry. Because in those days, they actually made curry, which tasted like a Thai food. Today, it's horrible. It's like candy. You could puke from it. See, most of the Asian food that we eat today is horribly Americanized. It's like American wine, which has been made sweet for the soda tastes of Americans. But in those days, curry was so hot, it almost burned you to death. And Bob would look at me and he would say, I'd say, God, it's so hot. How could I eat this? And he would smile and drink his beer and look back. He died a number of years ago and say to me, Michael, he said, the test of a good curry is the next day. And we had a very nice meal. And, of course, the next day was not as nice as he described it, to be very honest with you. But it kept the plumbing operational, and that's the object of good food. The phone number is 1-800. Am I needing a break now, or where are we in the show? Am I in a break? Or I mean, the end of the hour and 6 minutes. Did I just come out of a break or am I in a break? I don't know where I'm at. I need some Chinese food or something spicy tonight. I'm not going to go to the Korean restaurant. The language is too difficult. It's too far. It's too cold. I'll tell you what. I'll stay in the Asian theme. I'll go to an Indian restaurant. At least I know what a curry looks like, and that'll be that. I'll say, all right, I'll drink it, whatever. I'm not going to go as far as a Korean. It's just too difficult here in the area that I live in to find a decent restaurant. Indian's good. I can go to Indian. Indian, I know what I'm going to get tonight. I never fails a good Indian meal. So there it is. Korean barbecue is out, and the Indian curry is in, and the chicken the this, and the Penang that, and the $4 million vacation. Dallas, Texas. Pete, you're on the Savage Nation. What's on your mind?
Savage, you know, they're going to whitewash the whole lineage of Kim Jong mentally ill, so Obama could invite him over here. That's why he's not vacationing at Martha's Vineyard or Camp David. They're probably renovating the place to invite this guy over here. They're going to stage some phony handshake.
You mean with the new one, the Kim Jong-un, right?
The son.
And that the un.
Wow, look what Obama accomplished. He got rid of bin Laden. He got rid of Gaddafi, and he brought peace between North Korea and the United States.
Wow. Well, that would be quite an accomplishment. He should get another Nobel Peace Prize. Remember, we have a president who was given a Nobel Peace Prize for breathing. Remember before he did anything, he was given a Nobel Prize?
Right, and all those wonderful articles he wrote at over at Harvard.
Well, at Occidental College is where his genius really showed its true form in the beginning, in Occidental College, during his partying days. That's when people really saw the early phase of his genius. So you actually think that there'll be a unification of North and South Korea?
Oh, no, no. I think they're going to stage a phony handshake between the Sun and President Obama just to have it posted.
You don't mean in the near future, over the next week or so in Hawaii, do you?
I think in the next year, before the next election, he's going to somehow get him over here for, you know, whatever house cat kebabs or something. They'll dine out, they'll wine and dine him, and they're going to state some kind of photo op.
Well, who knows what comes tomorrow? They could do it at the East West Center in Hawaii. A tremendous hive of spying. That's a good place to go. 1-800-449-8255. New York, Pat, welcome to the Savage Nation. You're on the air. Go ahead, please.
You know, all our world leaders really are taking, or all our presidents are really taking too much time off, whether it's a Republican or a Democrat. It's really more indicative of...
Wait. Now we're lumping already. That's like saying that they're all dictators. Did Bush take vacations like this? Did he travel to Hawaii at a cost of $4 million with two major league jets?
Well, I don't know what the numbers were for his vacations, but I do know he...
Well, I'm not here to, let us say, support Bush and bash Obama, although it's the alpha and omega of presidencies, even though Bush was a socialist, a mild Republican socialist at that. The fact of the matter is, when Bush took a vacation, it was usually in Crawford, Texas. I wouldn't compare that to flying to Hawaii, which costs $4 million.
Sure, but I mean, don't you think it's more that we're getting people in office that just don't really care about the job necessarily? And that's why.
Well, how about how it, let's say the job. How about how it looks to the people themselves? You have massive unemployment. You have people who can't even afford Christmas presents. You got people out of work, and he's taking a $4 million vacation in Honolulu. Do you think that that's good PR or bad PR? And if it's bad PR, which it is, it tells you that he's out of touch with reality, or they can afford to buy so much airtime between now and the election that they don't care what they do.
Yeah, completely out of touch with reality. But can I say one?
Okay, we can agree on that one. We can, even though we won't be eating Wang Saiwu Gui tonight together, we can agree on that one.
Yeah, just a...
Pittsburgh, PA. Okay, Pete, New York, you're up on the Savage Nation from WOR. What's on your mind, Pete?
Yeah, well, remember last week when Mitt Romney made the $10,000 bet with Rick Perry and the Democrats?
Oh, yeah, bingo, right. They turned that into, oh, he's a rich guy. He's a rich man. Like, that's a crime to be rich, you hear? And there's something noble about being poor all of a sudden.
Yeah.
But here's Obama spending $4 million on a vacation in Honolulu. They don't make a peep about it. That's what you're saying. That's good.
Yeah,
that's very good. So you're getting a copy of Abuse of Power, the only one I've given out today, because I forgot to give them out. It's too close to Christmas for anyone to go buy it, even though they should clean the stores out. What can I do? It's an amazing thing, but I'm going to take another call. Arizona, Thomas, you are next up on the Savage Nation. Fire away.
Hi. I'm a young guy, 19, and every day I get really tired listening to the news. Everything's always bad. Everything's always horrible. And then you'll go from, Kim Jong-il and how the media is always,
In other words, okay, yes, I put in context that he was a miserable, horrendous, worst case, the worst dictator of our time. And he just died, and the media makes him look like another leader. And then I jump to a joke about a menu or something like that. And that's more easily digested, yes?
Yeah, because I was listening to you, and I'm getting really tired, and I'm just like, what are we going to do? And then you jump to food, and then it just brightens my day.
Well, I have to do it for myself, so I went to a Korean menu. Because whenever I see any news story related to a nation, I think of the cuisine. And I usually formulate my desire for food that night based upon who died or who was born or who just got a Nobel Prize or who just got a hole in one. It's the Savage Nation. Every show counts. Each one I attempt to create into a Persian miniature. Listen on your local affiliate for another big, big hour following this one right here on your local affiliate.
Savage. We'll be right back.
Warning. The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
Now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
North Korea announced last night its leader, Kim Jong-il, has died. State TV said he was 69 years old. Kim has been called a delusional leader who was responsible for a famine that killed a million of his people. To others, he was a political survivor who managed to hold his own in a high-stakes game of nuclear poker.
Won't be the same, dear.
Even with the regime's many tools of repression, it's amazing that Kim was able to prevent a massive exodus of starving refugees.
When he took over the country in 1994, with the economy already in free fall, and the country really having lost its main benefactor in the Soviet Union, and when you think that we were all predicting North Korea's downfall within 1 or 2 years back then, I mean, when you think how well he played that card, it really is quite extraordinary.
Questions we're asking today on the program are these. Why are liberals in love with dictators? Sean Penn loves Chavez, the dictator of South America. Sean Penn loves Ahmadinejad, the Hitler of Iran. Danny Glover, I don't know what he loves, but we'll leave it at that. And the others. Why do they continue to extol dictators? Will Kim Jong-il's death make North Korea less stable? Obviously, they're a junkyard dog of China, and you feel how do you think China will exploit this situation? Other than Madeleine Albright, who should be held up on war crimes for what she did to Serbia, other than her, who do you believe is most responsible for not stopping Kim Jong-il in getting nukes? Will Madeleine Halfbright be named special envoy to Pyongyang and bake brisket for Kim Jong-un? The man was fond of booze, blondes, porno. What do you think his son, Un, will favor? His last name is UN. What do you think has caused Newt Gingrich's collapse in the polls and Ron Paul's surge? You wouldn't think it has anything to do with this show, do you? Republicans are committing Harry Caray and floating the idea of Condoleezza Rice as VP. Do you think this woman should be nominated as the GOP VP? Why or why not? Well, the 10 most insane delusions of Kim Jong-il are these. Here are the 10 craziest Jong-il stories from Gawker. 1. They say he was born in a log cabin, which is nonsense. He was actually born in a guerrilla camp in Russia. In 06, Zhang, mentally ill, learned that a man in Germany breeds giant rabbits. So he got in touch with the man in Berlin and wanted to farm these giant rabbits to alleviate the starvation amongst his people. Never happens. Nobody knows where the giant rabbits went. 3, state textbooks claim Jong-il does not produce urine or feces. No comment. 4, Jong-il claimed to be the world's greatest golfer. The media in North Korea, which is approximately equal to that of ABC, CBS, NBC, and CNN and MSNBC, reported that he shot 38 under par on a regulation 18-hole golf course, including 5 holes in 1. Nobody ever saw it. As the World Festival of Youth and Students approached in 1989, Jong-il had disabled residents taken away from Pyongyang. He didn't want anyone seeing them. The Stalinist government also distributed pamphlets that touted a wonder drug that cured shortness. He then sent the short people who responded to a series of uninhabited islands in the hopes of ridding his nation of imperfect genes. Oh, my God. 6, he imprisoned relatives of convicts because he's convinced the stain of criminality persists for three generations. Jean-Gil was Hennessy Cognac's biggest single client in 93 and 94, spending $850,000 annually on the cognac. The supreme leader and hero of the Associated Press at NPR had a fear of flying, so he traveled on an armored train and had lobsters airlifted to each station as he arrived. Well, there's more to it. You get the picture, don't you? The double rainbow of Kim Jong-il, extolled by none other than NPR.
Kim's official biographers say that he was born on Mount Baekdu, the mythic origin of the Korean race. In fact, he was born in 1942 in the Russian Far East, where his father, Kim Il-sung, was waging guerrilla warfare against Japanese occupation of Korea. Given Kim Il-sung's stature and charisma as North Korea's founding father, Kim Jong-il was at a disadvantage from the start. Kim responded to the famine by launching some limited economic reforms, including the Jangmadang, or private markets for food and daily necessities, which the state-run economy could no longer adequately provide. He also stepped up diplomatic engagement, leading to the first inter-Korean summit in 2000.
Newt's lead has collapsed. We told you that. Newt's lead has collapsed. Shocking. 1-800-449-8255. Plenty of stories, but most of you are on vacation, right? Most of you are gone, so I think I'll go to michaelsavage.com and give you all the latest headlines and see if you're interested in any of these. You ready? Here's a nice picture for you. Madeleine Halfbright appeased Kim, glowed about him afterwards. Madeleine Albright, the same woman who bombed Serbia into the Stone Age and helped rob Kosovo from Serbia, which had been part of Serbia since the 1300s, went to North Korea and enjoyed a banquet while people starved to death. She came back glowing about Kim Jong-il. This is your government at work. Madeleine Albright, Bill Clinton's Secretary of Hate.
It wasn't until Kim Dae-jung went and said that he had some very important discussions with him and found him to be somebody that he could talk to that was rational, pragmatic, I found the same thing. It has been 6 years since his father has died. He is in charge of what is called kind of a hermit kingdom. And he listened very carefully. He didn't lecture me. I went through all my talking points with him, and he gave rational answers, and he seems pragmatic. He also told me he had three computers in his office, watches a different television network, and stays informed. He says that he reads.
Was he watching CNN?
CNN. Mm-hmm. Said he did. And I did find him informed.
If you're interested in such things, we have a YouTube clip of the subjugated masses in North Korea weeping hysterically at dictator's death. Kind of reminds you of some domestic Democrats. Egypt's Islamists claim sweep of second-round vote. Thank you, Jimmy Carter. Obama is spending $4 million on his winter vacation in Hawaii. This is while the national debt is out of control. Ron Paul leads in Iowa. With Kim Jong-il dead, who's in charge? Well, okay. By the way, they tried a healthy school lunch in L.A. and it failed. The children wouldn't eat it. They said it was nasty, rotten stuff. The kids were trading on the side in Doritos and sodas. They wouldn't touch the garbage. The district says the menu will be revised. Californians fight to overturn the so-called DREAM Act. Good for them. They want a November ballot initiative to repeal the DREAM Act, which gives benefits to illegal aliens. Good for them. In the middle of my website, CNN's Slimy Limey, under fire for hacking phones. That's the man with the nun show, Piers. Well, we don't even mention his last name. You've seen him, the Slimy Limey. Nice picture of a bishop joining the bum rioters in New York City. Jumping over a fence to so-called occupy it. I don't know how he could do it being so grotesquely fat and wearing that cassock. We'll let it go at that. My headline says it all. Fat old communist bishop joins rioters in New York City. Is he looking for young recruits? Muslim husband chops off wife's fingers for studying. Well, you know, look, that's their culture. It's a cultural defense. You can't have women studying, not if you're an Orthodox man from that religion. Now you have to have let the man enact his culture. Here's another headline from Michael Savage. Evil scum try to force Air Force to remove nativity and menorah scenes on an Air Force base, a Travis Air Force base. The Air Force says, up yours to these lousy bums, these atheists. They should be thrown into North Korea. Polygamy gets okay in human rights immigration case. An American woman who worships Norse gods. Oh, you want to read it, go to michaelsavage.com. Every degenerate pervert. I have to listen to their viewpoint. Ten Commandments come to Times Square. Russian chemist buys $88 million New York City penthouse. Chemist, huh? Well, that's just the beginning of the story. Professor says NYU fired him for giving an actor a D because the actor hardly showed up to class. He dared to flunk the overhyped Hollywood hunk for blowing off class, gave him a D, and was fired. You want to read about it? Go to michaelsavage.com. What can I tell you? It's all there. And we're going to talk about it today. Believe me, here's some more stories. New study predicts the death of newspapers in 5 years. You mean they're not dead yet? All this and more right here on the Savage Nation.
Savage.
Jingle bell, jingle bell, jingle bell rock. Jingle bells swing and jingle bells ring. Snowing and blowing up bushels of fun. Now the jingle hop has begun.
Jingle. So last night, I'm in bed again watching too much television. I'm starting to get embarrassed now. The weather's bad, so I have an excuse to stay home and watch television, and I do it and I shouldn't. Because when the children were young, we didn't have a television. I refused to let them watch TV. I was one of those. And they both turned out great. Maybe it helped. But now I find myself watching television at night and too much of it, mainly movies. In fact, either the History Channel, Military History, the Science Channel, National Geographic, or a movie. So late at night, I'm watching a movie from 1948 that had me captivated for a number of reasons. It was, I don't know the name of it, but it was about an FBI agent who goes undercover into the underworld, pretends to be a criminal, and it was so unbelievably bad that I couldn't stop watching it. You know, and now we walk down the halls of the FBI where J. Edgar Hoover, remember those movies? The guys all had those Dick Tracy suits. So I'm watching the movie, and I start to see certain things in it. A lot of the characters were from real life, and they went into a gym in Philadelphia where the scenes were shot. They were real boxers training in a gym, which was very interesting to watch. The characters. Where are the men like that? I ask myself, what happened to men that they've all become almost homogenized in this country? When I was a young boy, the men were all like weird looking. Guys had like nasal hair, ear hair. But aside from that, I'm doing that to attract your eyes and ears to what I'm saying to you. The men look different. Now everyone has a homogenized, pasteurized, aluminumized look. I don't understand what happened to my country. Men were very unique. I'm saying, you take a gym full of white men, they all look different. They had weird faces. Now everyone has the same kind of like idiotic grin. But anyway, so the movie's about an FBI agent who goes undercover and gets into the rackets, whatever, in order to bust him. So, you know, I just saw the movie with Jack Nicholson. What is it called? The Untouchables. I forget. The Untouched. I don't even remember the movie's name. They will help me out. The Departed. And it was excellent. I really liked Nicholson. I liked DiCaprio. I liked Matt Damon. They were all good in the movie, and the movie was very captivating. But a good portion of the plot was taken directly from this 1948, slap them together and, you know, throw it out their movie. Now, that's not why I'm talking about it. In the movie, there's a quick scene about them wanting a fighter who looks like he's going to be the favorite to take a fall for money. You know, take a dive, in other words. In other words, he's the favorite, and they say to him, if you go down in the third round, we'll make a lot of money because you're the favorite. And in all those movies from the 45 era up until about when the hippie scum took over the movie business, after the hippie communist scum from New York City took over the movie business, most of the movies were about temptations and honor. A fighter was set, it was set, you take a dive and you'll make a lot of money. And it was the tension of the fighter saying, no, I have honor. I will not take a dive. And what usually happened to him is he got beaten up or killed. Or you go back to On the Waterfront with Marlon Brando, that great movie. What was that all about? That was about honor. He was unwilling to take a dive, in other words, and he died for it.
So the movies were always about the temptations and the honor of the man who would not accept the temptation for money, for the quick buck. That's what the tension was. That's what the storyline was. That's what America grew up on. That's what America became strong on. Now you got Murdoch, who's into the quick buck, and so he'll take the temptation for a higher rating and a quicker buck. No honor. Do you understand what I'm saying to you or not? How a society can be formed by its art, and you can't condemn every movie ever made. That would be absurd. Some are good, some are bad, some are indifferent. Some are funny, some are not funny, blah, blah, blah. But what I'm getting at is there were movies about morality in the days that I grew up. For example, crime never paid. You never could see the bad guy win in a movie when I grew up. My father taught me that. He said, you notice, Michael, every movie the bad guy gets caught in the end. Now we know that's nonsense. All you got to do is look at the U.S. Senate. We understand that. But in those days, you were conditioned by your movie to realize you'd get caught in the end. So I asked my father, why is that? He said, well, the FBI worked out something with Hollywood where Hollywood agreed never to show the bad guy winning because they didn't want to encourage people to go into that line of work. Now, compare that to the movies being produced now by the hippie pothead scum from hell in the movie business today, where the bad guy is always shown to win and the straight guy is shown to be a moron. Play on the waterfront. Then I'll go back.
Charlie, it was you. Remember that night in the garden, you came down my dressing room and said, kid, this ain't your night. We're going for the price on Wilson. You remember that? This ain't your night. My night, I could have taken Wilson apart. So what happens? He gets the title shot outdoors in a ballpark, and what do I get? A one-way ticket to Palookaville. You was my brother, Charlie. You should have looked out for me a little bit. You should have taken care of me just a little bit so I wouldn't have to take them dives for the short-end money.
Oh, I had some bets down for you. You saw some money.
You don't understand. I could have had class.
All right, we got the picture. Get out the Kleenex. I could have had class. I could have been a contender. I could have been somebody instead of a bum. Now, what you have today are people who are bums, who have no class, who think they're somebody. You get the picture?
Savage.
With the heart attack and death of the dictator, the Stalinist prison camp dictator, Kim Jong-il, well, what does the future of North Korea look like? Should we be worried? I would be. Could Il's successor be even more ill, his son Kim Jong-un? Could he be worse than his father? Absolutely. Well, joining us right now in the Savage Nation to give us his opinion is the executive vice president of Regent University and former assistant administrator at the U.S. Agency for International Development, Dr. Paul Bonaccelli. Dr. Paul Bonaccelli, welcome to the Savage Nation.
Michael, my pleasure to be with you.
So in your estimation, what does the future of North Korea look like?
I think that the chances are that it will be bleaker rather than brighter are probably pretty great. This is a situation where you have a 27, 28-year-old. He might not be as lazy and playboyish as his brothers, so to speak, but it doesn't look like he has the maturity or would get it anywhere in what he's done in his life. And you could well have generals struggling. You know, they've been waiting for this opportunity for Kim Jong-il to be gone, and maybe this is the perfect time now for someone who says, hey, I've been around here 40, 50 years. I really am the one who should be leading this. So I'm expecting that it won't be so easy for the young man to take control.
People are talking about a possible power struggle inside the North Korean leadership. Do you believe that there's a power struggle? And who would it be between the generals and the family?
Right now, there doesn't appear to be any sign that there is. Those who read the tea leaves of these things see that the Kim Jong-un, the young one, has now been appointed head of the funeral committee, and that looks sort of normal, and there are no signs anywhere else. They did a missile test right away. All of the things, and there are not many things that you see, do look pretty normal. So there's no way to say that we know that's happening now. But it makes perfect sense to speculate that people who have been eyeing this for a while probably see this as their chance. One mitigating factor is that the Chinese certainly don't want there to be trouble and probably have made it clear to whoever they talk to regularly in the military, because it's a military mafia that runs the country. They probably told them that they wanted to remain peaceful and stable.
What's the chance that Il's son, Un, could be a worse dictator than his father and grandfather?
I think that he could be worse for two reasons. One, because he may well be immature and ignorant and simply doesn't know what he's doing, and that will invite all kinds of chaos and encourage people to try to take their shot at getting power. But I also don't think much of, you know, what he's done with his life so far. A little bit of time in Switzerland in school, the rest of the time apparently watching the NBA and Western movies, and probably being as much of a playboy as he can be. So all of that bespeaks immaturity, which in the way he was raised would probably mean cruelty, and certainly couldn't care less about the people of North Korea.
Well, can the United States do anything, and should it?
I think that one of the things the United States could do is to, behind the scenes, make it very clear that if this is truly an opportunity in the eyes of a new regime to have peace, to have stability, not necessarily reunify with the South, but just to have a different kind of posture, they should be told this is the time to do it. We will consider that because everybody understands there's face-saving when a leader has died and new leaders take over. But I think the same message, the very clear message, should be sent. We will not tolerate any provocations. He should not prove his mettle by attacking the South in any way. That our defensive posture and frankly, our forward-leaning posture with the DMZ remains exactly the same. That doesn't sound so convincing after the Bush years and the Obama years of not holding their feet to the fire and allowing them to get the nuclear weapons, but it would be good to start it now.
In your opinion, does this have any effect on the race for the White House? I would expect one of the clowns to say something about it.
I don't see how it will affect the White House unless something does actually blow up and then gives the president an opportunity to look either strong or weak. The Republican candidates would be simply watching to know whether or not he makes a mistake. I know that sounds awfully political, but I do think that's the way it will be seen right now.
Dr. Paul Bonaccelli, thanks for joining us today on the Savage Nation.
I'm a little off today. I got to tell you, there's a bad side to the Cadillac. I got a headache on me from the fumes that I can't even tell you. As I was putting it away in the garage, those cars stink. They emit such pollution, it's unbelievable. I mean, no matter how I try to stop it, I put it in the garage, I almost gagged to death. It reminded me of the whole 1960s all over again when I would play around in Nyberg's funeral parlor driving the Cadillac hearses and the flower cars. 10-year-old kid, 11-year-old kid, the guys in the funeral business used to let me drive the cars inside the funeral parlor. What fun I had. You know, park them. That's why I'm a very good driver to this day. My dad had a little antique store next to it. It was a funeral parlor, right? So as a kid, in those days, you could play on the street without getting killed or raped because all the men were out there watching the kid. And if anyone looked at you wrong, they would either have the guy thrown down into a basement or they'd call a cop who would give him a beating like he never had in his life with a nightstick, and the pervert would never come around to the neighborhood again. But those were those days. Anyway, I go in the funeral parlor as a kid, and they let me drive the hearse and this car and the flower car. But those garages stank, you know what I mean? I mean, the fumes. How did the men even survive in those days? The reek that came out of those cars in the 60s, 50s, 60s. They had a passageway onto the elevator. I mean, the garage must have been built in the 20s or the 30s. Now you're talking the 50s, 60s. The cars were wider, right? It was less than a quarter of an inch clearance to pull it into one of those Godfather elevators, you know, like where they pull a strap and you pull a car in and they pull the strap and the door comes down. And the elevator has certain sounds like, they threw like the wheel they would turn. It was a different sound in the elevator. It was smooth. Like an Electroglide in Blue elevator, you know, that took you right up. If you pressed the wrong way on the thing, it took you down into the mortuary where they did the embalming. I really didn't want to go down there once. I did go down there once. Remember I told you I went in the mortuary? Remember I told you that story? So one hot summer day on Ludlow Street in my father's market, I'm fishing around for those Coca-Cola bottles in an ice box. There was not a refrigerator outside. They actually had ice. And they had the water would turn so cold that when you fished for the, you'd roll up your undershirt and you'd stick your arm in and you'd fish around for a soda. And the water was so cold your arm turned blue by the time you found the soda. Actually, the last I saw that portrayed in the movies was in Carlito's Way, where the guy reaches for the soda and gets knocked off. So anyway, I got my arm in the thing. I'm fishing out the soda. That, I'm giving you the picture, the background. And my father goes back in his store. To this day, you know, having dreams, I'm back in the store with him over and over again. Maybe I'm, I don't know, I don't want to get into it. I don't want to get into this whole maudlin thing, but I think I'm dreaming too much about him and the store. It means like I'm about to, you know, take the walk. I don't know. It's not good. These dreams are not good. If you start dreaming too much about that, it means that you're close to, you know what I mean? So I don't really like it, but I don't control the subconscious. So anyway, he goes back in the store, and I think the guy's name was Louie from the funeral parlor. He says, hey, kid, you want to come in here and take a look around? Yeah, yeah, I go in. I go in there. He says, have you ever seen a stiff? I said, no. He said, you want to see a stiff? Now, he wasn't, we're not talking pervert here, okay? He meant corpse. We're not talking about, you know what I'm saying, the teachers of today. So he says, all right, the elevator, down, pulls the strap. And instead of going up into the garage, down into the thing. And there, and I see, and there's the stiff, and the autopsy, the boy cut open, and they're horrible, like a chicken farm. So now I come up from whatever they call it. And that's not an autopsy. An autopsy's in the hospital, right? This is an embalming. Horrible, disgusting thing. I come up, I'm 11 years old. There must have been a change in my eyes because my father was on the street looking for me. Michael, 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 where are, and he sees me come out of there. And he looks in my eyes. You know, a father can see it. He sees a change in me. He says, where were you? I said, I was in there with Louie. He said, well, what'd you do in there? I said, I went downstairs. And what'd you do downstairs? I told him. Well, I don't think he ever liked Louie again after that.
Savage.
Don't know what tonight's going to bring, let alone tomorrow. I mean, we make plans. Sure, we plan. Everyone thinks they're going to live a ripe old age. They're going to be surrounded. They're going to get a little ill, not totally ill, not very badly ill, not never cancer, no heart attack, nothing like that. That happens to other people. They're just going to slowly slow down, and oh, they're going to wind up sitting quietly in a resort somewhere, a resort-like retirement community. They'll be able to take care of themselves right to the end, and they'll be surrounded by loving friends and family, and they will die in their sleep at approximately 99 years of age. It happens, perhaps one out of a billion. I don't know what the number is now. Maybe one out of 500 million might go that way, or one out of 300 million. I don't really have the numbers, but it's not happening to you, Johnson. More likely, it will be a horrendous slow death, either from cancer or some other debilitating disease, or even worse yet, Alzheimer's disease, where you're left for hours at a time in a nursing home in a corner, staring at a curtain, unable to move and not knowing who you are, where an orderly will beat you about the head and neck slowly with something that hides the blunt trauma and steals the small change that your adult son or daughter brings you. So, you know, given that that's the fact of reality here, and I'm in a long day's journey and tonight mood, which I've been in since I'm about 16 years old, but particularly now. I'm not sad. I'm not agitated. I'm just affected by this because, you know, look, the Grim Reaper comes around and he gets closer and closer, and you see him circling and you start saying, there we go again, you know. And so what is it that you want to do with the rest of your life? You have to ask yourself, if you're a driven man as I am, and I've been driven all my life, let me tell you right now, this is nothing new to me. I've been driven from very early on to do things in my life. And I'm no saint. Don't confuse me with trying to tell you I'm such a saint. I'm not Al Gore, okay? I'm none of those people. I'm just like you. Maybe I'm a little luckier and maybe I'm a little more hardworking than some people, but I'm not different than the average intelligent person out there in some ways. In some ways, I'm a genius. In some ways, I'm a big idiot. I understand all of that. That's the human being. But I have a gift. There's no question I have a gift in radio. It's probably inherent. It's innate. Nobody taught me how to do radio, and look where I am after 13 years. I'm in the winner's circle, just where I knew I would be. Now, I could spend the next number of years just trying to get to number one, the number one slot. I could do that if I wanted, and I could probably win. I mean, I could change my time slot and go right up against Rush, and I'm telling you, Rush wouldn't stand a chance. In 1 year, he wouldn't be number one. I would be number one. But I don't have such a desire. It doesn't mean anything to me. It has no meaning to me, none whatsoever. I've always seen the big picture. I've always seen the longer picture. There's very little that I want for materially. I only want my health and the health of my children, to be honest with you. But then I say, well, what about my poor country? What good is all of this health? What good is a reasonable success if the have-nots are being brought in by the tens of millions, and if the have-nots are being told that they can take from those who have created it by these evildoers in the Democrat Party? There's nothing to work for. They'll take it all away from your inheritors. They will not inherit Jack Johnson. They'll give it away to the bums who didn't work for it. And that motivates millions of people like me. Let me tell you right now, illegitimi non carborundum. We don't want the illegitimate taking away our livelihood, and we don't want the illegitimate stealing from us any more of our damn tax money. Here in the state of California, we pay not only federal tax, we pay 10% of our income as state income tax. 10% right off the top. But wait, there's a bigger insult. Last year, while you slept, they added another tax for people in a slightly higher bracket in the state of California of an additional 1% called a mental health tax. So that's 11%. Now, what the heck is a mental health tax? Where does the money go? Well, you say, well, it goes for mental health. No, it probably goes to gray-bearded child molesters so they can write papers and go to conferences in Thailand and rape young boys. That's where the extra 1% goes. I can guarantee you it doesn't go anywhere else. And where will it end? Nobody knows where it'll end. So these are the things that are agitating me. And I read you the opener, how long do we have, and that the Athenian Republic lasted not very long, but that in 1787, Alexander Tyler, a Scottish history professor, said a democracy is always temporary in nature. It simply cannot exist as a permanent form of government because a democracy will exist up until the time that voters discover that they can vote themselves generous gifts from the public treasury. And that's Hillary Clinton. That's the invented man called Obama. That's the Biden, that's the Edwards mentality, which is to live like commissars in the ex-Soviet Union and tell you that they're for the people. They are absolute Bolsheviks. They're right out of the Communist Party USA with a slight differential, believe me, and not a great one at that. So that's what I was thinking about. So now let me go a little bit more here of where I'm coming from and how I got there. In my neighborhood, I had seen a 57 Eldorado for a while in a garage. I know you're saying, how the heck did he jump to there? Well, watch where I'm going. And you'll see I'll come back to where I started from. And I had seen, so I inquired from a neighbor's neighbor, is it for sale, blah, blah, blah. So I went and looked at it yesterday. It's a 57 Eldorado, totally restored, frame up, really nice car. I have a 65 Caddy convertible. I have a weakness for 60s and 50s cars that are perfect. I don't really have the place to put it, but I looked at it, we talked. And this gentleman's from Sweden, very nice man. And before long, we started talking about the Muslim attempt to take over Sweden. I said, how did you Vikings let this happen to you? He said, we were too tolerant. He said, they came in asking for asylum, and we woke up, we can't even go into some cities. And he said, don't even get my mother started. My mother is vehement on this issue, that if we don't crack down on them and deport these imams, we're going to lose Sweden. And on and on and on. And I said, well, look at the illegal aliens in America. I said, Ted Kennedy is working around the clock to grant amnesty to 30 million illegal aliens, which will be the death of the United States of America as we know it. It will be over. It will be over. As far as I'm concerned, it's a declaration of war against our sovereignty. To me, it's a declaration of war against the people. I don't know how else to put it. What do you think? I like saying this? You think I don't know I'm putting myself in danger? I'm nobody. But I'm not alone. Tens of millions of you understand what's at stake. You don't want the illegal aliens to be granted amnesty. You know what that'll do to this country. You know it'll give them the right to bring in 5, 10, as many relatives as they want. Within 5 years, you'll be living in Tijuana with all of the horrendous problems of Mexico on a street corner near you. And if you want to live in Mexico, then I suggest you go live in Mexico. But for God's sakes, don't make this great nation into that corrupt socialist dictatorship called Mexico. And so having churned all of this over the weekend, I woke up at 3:30 in the morning. I couldn't sleep because of the mortality thing and the this and the that. And I started to add it up, and I said to myself, I'm leveling with you like I'm talking with you in a bar. And this is one of the things I can do very well. And you listen because It's like a guy talking to you from the heart and from real. So I know you're listening, those of you who want to listen, and those who don't, well, I can't help you. If you want to hear a regular, this is the Savage Nation, and we'll be talking, I'm not going to do that. There are other people who do that very well. This is much different. It's conversational, and it's based upon the reality of the man doing the show. So you'll go along with me. And I'm not, I need a break coming up, but let me start with this. I said, did you add up the decades of your life? Now look at where you were from like age 11 to 21. Look at the change in your life in those 10 years. I said 11 to 21 was one of the most dramatic. You can't even do that lump. That's too big. Because at that age, 11 to 15 is already a change in your life unlike perhaps any you're ever going to experience again, except perhaps from middle age to old age. So let me back up. From like fifth, okay, let's start when I graduated high school, college. I don't even know how old I was. I entered college when I was, I've forgotten completely. I don't even know anymore. I'm losing track of it. I was like 16 when I went into, I was 16 when I got out of high school. I skipped the grade, and the way I was born, the month I was born, they put me in, blah, blah, blah. So I entered college at 16. I graduated college at 21. It took me 5 years. Because my father got a heart attack and I had to leave school for a semester and go run his little store and sell various things and leave school. But the fact of the matter is, I said, well, now look where you went. Yeah, now I was thinking, like from there, from when you got out of college, 21, you were just a social worker on the Upper West Side of Manhattan. You were working with welfare grifters who were ripping the system off then and you knew it. That's why you quit the welfare department. I have story after story. You say, like the road, how I became a conservative. Well, let me tell you where it started. It started when I was a welfare worker. They didn't call it anything else then. It's called welfare. You went and you gave them a little check, and you found out they were grifting everything under the sun on the side, making believe they were poor, those bums. Those bums didn't need the money. I needed the money. I lived